Up next, Spirits, Gods, and Magic. Dr. Jack Hunter with us. We're going to go live to the United Kingdom and talk about some incredible things on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. You're going to enjoy the next couple hours. Dr. Jack Hunter with us, anthropologist exploring the borderlands of consciousness, religion, ecology, and the paranormal. He is a tutor with the Sophia Center for the Study of Cosmology, Culture, University of Wales, the Trinity St. David. His doctoral research with the University of Bristol examined the experiences of spirit mediums and their influence on the development of self-concepts and the models of consciousness, and is an effort towards a non-reductive anthropology of the paranormal. About that, a couple of his books include Spirits, Gods, and Magic, and Engaging the Anomalous. Dr. Jack Hunter, live in the United Kingdom. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to this, my friend. And how are things in the United Kingdom these days?
Pretty weird, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But, out here in the hills of Wales, you don't really notice much difference. I think it's just kind of plodding on as usual.
Absolutely. Now, your new work is called Spirits, Gods, and Magic. How did you, Jack, as an anthropologist, get involved in the, I'll call it the strange and unusual?
Well, I'd always had a bit of a fascination, growing up. I've always been interested in things like, vampires and mummies and things like that. The interest in the paranormal had always been there. And I was always interested in religion and spirituality. Although I'm not religious myself, I've always had a kind of that fascination with it. And when I was at school, my favorite subject was religious education. In UK schools, religious education involves learning about all of the world's different religious traditions. So it kind of like opened my eyes to the possibility of, other ways of understanding the world, different ways of framing extraordinary experiences and things like that.
Were you always a believer, Jack, in the unusual and, the spirit world? Did you believe that it existed when you were, going through college and things like that?
I think I've gone through various different phases with it, really. Early on, I remember, when I was in primary school or, thereabouts, I was always kind of like a very scientifically minded kid, and I was quite anti-religious in myself. I didn't see the point in it. But I think over the years, and as I've had different kinds of experiences, my perspective has changed and transformed, and I've become a lot more open to it. But generally, I don't really say that I believe in anything. I like to try and keep my... I think, when you say that you believe in something, you kind of fix yourself down to a definite position. I'm not sure that that's particularly helpful, when you're dealing with something that is kind of wide and multifaceted as the paranormal. So I don't generally say that I believe in it, but I'm like open and I entertain it and explore it.
Let's go through each topic of the title of your book and have you tell us a little bit about each, and then we'll get into this, and then we'll take calls pretty soon, Jack, with you. Mm-hmm. Spirits, your impression, what are they?
That's a good question.
Huh.
So I think one of the things that I've tried to do with my approach is to try, I think kind of related to what I was just saying as well, is to try and keep things as open as I possibly can. So when I'm talking about spirits, I don't want to be reductive about it. So I don't want to go with the overly simple, explanation that they're just either, hallucinations or, product of the mind or any of those kind of things. I don't want to go down the wholehearted, like, I believe that these are 100% discarnate, entities kind of route. But what I do like to see, and this is what I tried to put across in my book, is that there are lots of different processes that go on in making spirits kind of known in the moment, in the social moment when they're, when they're being interacted with. So I think actually that spirits are you could kind of think of them as more than the sum of their parts, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it sure does.
In a seance situation, you're talking about a combination of performative elements from the medium, like the medium uses their body to perform in certain ways. You've got a combination of different kinds of psychophysiological states, like the medium goes into a trance, but so, the people who are situation also go into outer space. And then you've got the possibility of other, you know, non-physical processes going on as well. And spirits seem to arise kind of like at the juncture of all of these different processes. You know, not wanting to sound too wishy-washy about it, but I think that's the way that I understand spirits as kind of like an expression of all of these different processes that are going on, more than the sum of the parts. So you couldn't break them down into any one of those processes, if that makes sense.
And let's talk about the gods. Now, had you just said God, I'd have a pretty good handle on what you were talking about, but you say gods, so tell me what your thoughts are about that.
Well, you know, I think if we look at religion cross-culturally, you know, we take into consideration all the various different kinds of different forms of religion around the world, you know, there isn't just one God, you know, in terms of culturally at least. There's multiple gods. So, you know, any book that's dealing with the anthropology of religion has to take into consideration, you know, a wide spectrum of different kinds of gods, different ways that gods are conceived, different ways that gods are sort of interacted with and worshipped and praised. So I go through, in the book, I talk about, you know, monotheistic gods from Christianity and Judaism. You know, you could argue that they're all the same god. And then I talk also about polytheistic religions. So Hinduism would be a good example. And certain strands of Buddhism as well also have many different gods. So, yeah, that's why I've included gods in the title rather than God, because I want to incorporate all of the different religious traditions and explore them, you know, in an open-minded way.
And, of course, magic. Tell me about its inclusion in your title.
Yeah. Well, anthropologists have been interested in magic, you know, since the very beginnings of the discipline, because, you know, from a kind of like a mainstream Western materialist scientific perspective, magic is something that's, you know, often seen as kind of like, you know, you don't use these terms anymore, but primitive or, you know, savage, that kind of thing. But it's an old-fashioned way of thinking that's been superseded by scientific rationalism. And anthropologists have always had a kind of, you know, fascination for ways of thinking and ways of perceiving the world that are different to the mainstream. That's what anthropologists have gone out into the world to find. But they've usually tried to interpret it or explain it away in terms that, you know, that don't contradict the mainstream materialist, rationalist perspective. But, you know, I like to think about magic in light of the research in parapsychology, the findings about psi phenomena and all of those kind of things that seem to suggest, you know, that perhaps magic is more than just a set of beliefs, that actually magic might be tapping into something that is actually there, kind of like a fundamental process or part of nature. So that's my kind of perspective on it. Magic is, there's a whole load of cultural beliefs about magic, and then there's also the possibility of an underlying kind of like something real. There's an anthropologist called Michael Winkelmann in the 1980s who actually first, he didn't first do it, but he wrote a very influential paper in a current anthropology journal where he said that anthropologists need to reevaluate their theories of magic in light of the findings from parapsychology. So I think that's kind of what, you know, that's my starting point, Michael Winkelmann's paper, is to rethink anthropological approaches to magic in light of.
Did you coin the phrase, Jack, para-anthropology?
Well, I sort of coined it. I borrowed it from a book called Extrasensory Perception. No, Extrasensory Ecology, sorry, by Joseph Long, an anthropologist. And in that book, there was a chapter by a linguist called Roger Westcott where he's kind of playing with different ideas for names for this kind of burgeoning field of, you know, anthropological engagement with the paranormal. And he suggested, it was Roger Westcott who actually coined the term paranthropology. But in 2010... I kind of revitalized it by setting up a journal for anthropological approaches to the paranormal. And the paranthropology was the title I chose. And I've kind of, you know, nurtured it over the last 10 years. And other people have contributed to it as well, to the idea, and expanded it and developed it in different directions. So, yeah, I kind of coined it.
What do you think, Jack, this is all about? What's out there that's creating these spirits and magical events and the possibility of God or gods. What's doing all this?
That's a good question. Ultimately, I don't know. But if I was going to take a kind of a guess at the direction that this might all be heading in, I think it's got something to do with a sort of participatory, organic cosmos. You know, that the reality is something that we kind of participate in, and that when we participate and interact with it, then we kind of open ourselves up to interactions with all of the different kinds of intelligences and minds and persons that exist in the world. So I think that's the kind of direction my thinking is going, is that actually, you know, it's the universe, or whatever we want to, maybe even multiverse, that is conscious. And then it's the way that we interact with it, the way that we participate in it, that kind of gives opportunity for elements of that consciousness to arise. So I think, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of the direction I'm heading in.
As an anthropologist, would you consider yourself a scientist?
That's another good question. I consider myself a social scientist. I think social science is a different kind of science to the hard sciences.
Right.
That doesn't mean that it's any less scientific. So you're still applying the same kinds of, you know, scientific methods. I mean, anthropology, for example, is an empirical science. You go out into the field and you collect data and you analyze that data, and then you draw your conclusions and things. But it's a bit different to, you know, hard sciences. In hard sciences, you often work in the opposite direction. So you develop a hypothesis and then you go out into the field to test it. In the social sciences and anthropology, it's, you know, you build your hypotheses and your ideas up from the data that you've already collected. So I think, yeah, anthropology is a science, and I would consider myself a scientist, but a different kind of scientist. So, you know, the things that I'm dealing with, like consciousness, mind, persons, people, different kinds of subjectivities, they require different kinds of approaches, different methods. So it is scientific, yeah, but it's not hard science in that way.
Are you now a believer, Jack, in life after death?
Like I said before, I don't really consider myself a believer in anything, but I do think that there is, you know, good evidence that suggests or points in the direction of there being some kind of an afterlife. You know, for example, lots of the research on mediumship conducted by people like Julie Bischel at the Winbridge Institute, where they seem to be providing pretty good evidence that, you know, when mediums are going into their altered state, that they're getting their information from, you know, discarnate sources. They're not via telepathy or psi or things like that, but from some other perspective. And I think that, you know, if we extrapolate from that, then it opens up the possibility that there could be some kind of an afterlife. But I'm not going to put my foot on it and say that I'm 100% definitely convinced, because I'm not yet. But it looks that way.
When is science going to really start to study the paranormal and do a thorough job investigating? Because they're really not. I mean, it's being done by investigators or, you know, people like you who decide, you know what, there could be something here. But overall, science hasn't done anything to really investigate, not in a long time. Duke University here in the United States, Jack, years ago, had a department that would run that under a fellow by the name of Dr. J.B. Rhine. Since he died, that all fell apart. But when is science going to pick up the ball and run with this?
Well, I mean, there are organizations that are actively involved in psi research. So, for example, in the U.S., you've got the Parapsychology Foundation in New York. which was established in, I think, in the 1950s by a really famous medium called Eileen Garrett. And they've been providing funding for all sorts of parapsychological research for the past, you know, 50 years at the cutting edge of it. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be funded by them myself, and I'm now a research fellow with the Parapsychology Foundation. There's also the Parapsychological Association, which is the official kind of, I don't know what the word is, like governing body for parapsychologists, and it's a member of the American Academy of Sciences as well. Has been since 1969, I think. And there's a little interesting link to anthropology with that as well. It was actually the famous anthropologist Margaret Mead who, she put her weight behind the call for the Parapsychological Association to be recognized by the American Academy of Sciences.
Right.
So, you know, anthropology had an interesting little role there as well. But, yeah, so there's the Parapsychological Association, Parapsychology Foundation. And in the UK, we've got the one of the oldest, the world's oldest scientific research organizations dedicated to paranormal, the Society for Psychical Research, which was founded in 1882. And obviously all of these organizations are still, you know, publishing research. So actually, I think that situation is you know, not as dire. There are actually quite a few scientists and researchers who are investigating psi from a scientific perspective, which is promising. And there is still research money available, although it's difficult to get hold of, but it is out there. So, yeah, I think science is slowly catching up, but also it's continuing a long tradition of actually investigating it through these different kinds of organizations.
Jack, did you ever see the work of Dr. Shafika Karegula?
I don't think so.
Okay, she was my aunt. She's passed away now, but went to Oxford University out there in your neck of the woods, and she was a psychiatrist who decided to divert her practice into studying telepathy. She was fascinated by it and turned her entire practice from being a, you know, medical doctor who was a psychiatrist into studying telepathy. But she wrote a book called Breakthrough to Creativity. And she really started studying it, unfortunately died too early, or I really think she could have really put an inroad into this entire field. But you got to check her out. I think you'll enjoy her work.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
I'll make sure our producers get you her name and this spelling because it's a long last name.
Yeah.
With these spirits, you know, a lot of people have been haunted by spirits. Do you think something's going on, or do you think it's a figment of their imagination?
With hauntings, I think something is going on, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also think that imagination has a role in this. So, you know, like I was saying about this idea of participatory cosmos, one of the ideas that emerged from my field research with mediums in Bristol was that the seance and the spirits that emerge through them are kind of generated through our engagement and our dialogue with them. So we start to, you know, the circle leader, for example, the medium will go into a trance, and then the circle leader will pick out little movements or twitches in the medium's body that they will take as indicative that a spirit is trying to communicate. And then they'll focus in on that, and they'll draw it out, and eventually, you know, a spirit personality will emerge. It could take weeks or months.
Hold on for a second, Jack. We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back for more, and we'll take some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, along with Dr. Jack Clark, Hunter, who is out live in the United Kingdom, and we are taking phone calls as we talk about his latest work, Spirits, Gods, and Magic. Jack, where can people get that book?
You can get it pretty much anywhere. You can buy books. You can order it on, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Any online book retailer, really.
Did you ever expect that you would be writing about the paranormal world when you were in school?
In school, I probably hoped that I would be one day. yeah, when I got to university, the passion for it kind of took over. And I realized that, you know, you could write, for example, an academic dissertation on the paranormal, that actually there was a lot here to be written about and explored. So, yeah, I probably early on in my life, probably hoped that I would one day be someone who would write about the paranormal.
Well, let's take some calls for you. Here we go. We're going to Joe in Long Island, New York. Joe, go ahead. You're on with Dr. Jack Hunter.
Hi, Dr. Jack. Two quick questions. You know, I was in Ireland, and you mentioned the science of magic in nature. I thought, number one, I was being watched by a crow in Ennis in the morning, and then throughout the remainder of the trip, I felt like I was being followed by nature, but, you know, different events. And then my second question would be about Padre Pio. People that are still around now say he bilocated, and this is fairly documented among a lot of people, so that's bizarre.
And what do you mean by bilocated, Joe?
In other words, he would be in another country and hear a confession, you know, in a church in Italy when he was in Spain or whatever.
Someplace else at the same time.
Right, yeah.
Okay, Jack, go ahead. You want to take a jump at some of those?
Yeah, well, I like your story about being watched by a crow and feeling as though nature was watching you. And actually, I think, you know, things like animals, you know, birds, different kinds of animals, and also plants and things like that, they can be kind of like a conduit in a way for interacting with the world, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I totally understand that, you know, interacting with a crow, for example, can put you into that kind of that state of mind or that feeling of connection with nature. Although your experience sounds a little bit like you felt, you know, kind of maybe intimidated by the crow.
I had not heard the story of Padre Pio bilocating, had you?
Well, I've heard similar kind of stories about different kinds of saints. But yes, I think saints are pretty interesting. It's a good way of showing where kind of religion and the paranormal combine. Actually, I think that religion, in a way, kind of like it acts as kind of like a lens for the paranormal, and which is why that, you know, some of the paranormal experiences that are associated with people like Padre Pio are so intense, because the kind of the framework of Catholicism kind of gives the paranormal a focus. It's one of the things I write about in Spirits, Gods, and Magic, is how culture influences the manifestation and experience of the paranormal.
What do you think about the visitation at Fatima in Portugal, which occurred, of course, years ago? What about the possibilities of that being authentic?
I mean, there were thousands and thousands of witnesses for that event. So, you know, it certainly seems as though something happened, you know, whether it was an apparition of the Virgin Mary or perhaps, you know, it could have been some kind of a UFO sighting or some kind of, you know, other paranormal phenomenon is the big question. You know, what was it? Was it really a religious event, or was it a paranormal event that's been interpreted religiously? But definitely, it seems as if something happened on that.
Something did happen.
It wasn't one day, was it? It was over a period of time.
In all the witnesses who said they saw the sun come down, I think what they might have seen was a silvery disc UFO that might have come down. What do you think of that, Jack?
It's entirely possible. I wouldn't rule it out. The only problem is we can't go back and verify these things now.
So. No. Let's go to Joe in Monterey, California. Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Thank you, Joe.
It's a good subject. I should call you Captain Jack because you are an explorer. It's amazing how much you see when you start to investigate this area. I've been involved with it for a long time. Did you ever consider working with a psychic or a sensitive and doing some field work, and also developing your own sensitivity in doing that type of field work?
Mm. Well, my doctoral research was with spirit mediums in Bristol, so I've actually done quite a lot of field research with mediums, and they were actually trance mediums and also trying to develop physical mediumship as well, which is like, you know, ectoplasm, that kind of stuff that we saw in the 19th century. So a lot of my research has actually been field research with people who claim to be psychics and mediums. And then with regard to my own experience, a part of my field work for my PhD involved participating in mediumship development sittings. So I actually did do a little bit of mediumship development during my field work, and I had a strange experience, which I've talked about in the past, but where my left hand seemed to, for want of a better word, become possessed, or it seemed to do its own thing. And then that was kind of like, that was enough for me.
What happened? What happened, Jack? Tell us.
It was one day when the medium couldn't turn up for some reason. So they decided that they were going to do an open development sitting for spirits. Basically, they wanted to encourage spirits to make themselves known to anyone who was in the room. So it was me and I think there was about three or four other regular attendees at the Spirit Lodge. And we sat in a circle in the lodge and meditated to some kind of like New Age music. And then kind of like at the peak of my relaxation, I started to feel myself, it was almost as though I was slipping just gently, ever so slightly out the back of my body, you know, perhaps like, I don't know, like 30 centimeters or something. And I started to feel a tingling in my left hand. And I just sort of went with the feeling for a while. And it started to freak me out a little bit.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. So I kind of snapped myself out of it. I looked around the room. I was like, oh, my gosh, what's happening? What about all that about? And the circle leader, you know, they just kind of laughed and said, you know, what do you expect if you're going to start to develop mediumship and that kind of stuff?
Did you think there was something physical happening to you? Like you were having a stroke or something?
Well, I hope I wasn't having a stroke.
Right.
But I could have been, I suppose. I haven't had any adverse side effects from it. But it was definitely, you know, my mind and my body entered into some kind of an altered state. And whether it was a spirit trying to communicate through my body or not is, you know, a difficult question to answer now. But at the time, it made me realize that there was an experiential kind of core to mediumship. So, you know, it's easy to scoff at people who, you know, go into trances and things like that and say that they're just making it all up. But actually, if you engage with the practice and participate in these rituals, or however you want to think about them, seances, then these kinds of experiences do occur. And that's really what kind of, you know, made me delve deeper into the subject, is that I realized that there is actually something here that people are experiencing, whether it's genuinely paranormal or not. And I've experienced it myself. You know, the sensation of my body seemingly being controlled by some other intelligence. So it was an important experience for me, but I didn't want to then develop mediumship, you know, as a job or as a role.
Mm-hmm.
Not really my cup of tea.
Let's go to the state of Washington. Kathy's with us. Hi, Kath. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. It's good to hear Jack Hunter, Dr. Jack Hunter, because me and my sister have been talking about this very subject today.
Perfect timing.
She is an archaeologist. Her husband's an archaeologist. And I have experienced many different spiritual experiences in my life. And she discounts them and says that there is no afterlife, that you have to be crazy.
Which means she doesn't believe in God either, right?
Nope.
Didn't think so.
Do you, Dr. Jack Hunter, do you believe in the psychics? Do you believe there are psychics?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I know there are psychics and mediums and people who have these altered states of consciousness and these experiences. I mean, you know, that's kind of like, you know, they are there. I did my field work with these people. The bigger question is, like you said, whether any of it is, whether there is any reality underlying it. But I think actually that there probably is. It might not be as easy to kind of pinpoint. I don't, like, this is what I mean by talking about a non-reductive approach. We don't want to, you know, it doesn't really work when we try to come up with a really simple explanation for things. So we need to look for lots of different kind of possibilities and processes. So I think yes, there is something going on, but it's not as simple as saying that it's just spirits or it's just, you know, it's just God or whatever.
It seems, Jack, that England was the birthplace of mediums and psychics a long, long time ago. Am I right?
Well, I mean, world, you know, if we look at across all the world's traditions, we find things like shamanism, which is, you know, some people think of it as the world's kind of like oldest religious tradition. But, you know, shamans are essentially people who go into altered states just like mediums and psychics, and they go to spirit worlds, they communicate with discarnate beings, and then bring it back, bring back information, you know, for the benefit of the social group. So actually, you know, people have been doing things that we call mediumship or psychic or paranormal for, you know, thousands of years, going way, way back. So I think that, you know, it's something that has emerged all around the world. It's not something that comes from a particular spot. But, you know, the modern spiritualist movement actually has its origins in America. It's you know, with the Fox sisters in 1846 or whenever it was.
Yeah.
So, but then it kind of, like, really took hold in the UK when spiritualism moved over and mediums started to do their demonstrations. And, you know, I think it was the first spiritualist churches were actually established in the UK. You know, spiritualism became more like a religion here than it did maybe in America.
Let's go to Allison in Los Angeles. Hello, Allison. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks.
Good. Hey, I was wondering, do you know how I can get rid of telepathy? I had this terrible telepathic connection with the neighbor upstairs and also my ex.
How to get rid of it?
Yes. They won't leave me alone.
Most people would love to have it. I don't know how you would get rid of it. Once you've gotten the gift, Jack, of psychic ability or telepathy, you can't just get rid of it. You can't turn it off like a radio or television. What do you do?
Well, I mean, it's a tricky one. I'm not an expert in you know, in this kind of thing, but what I would perhaps say is just to try to control it more. So, you know, perhaps meditation or something like that. Again, I'm not an expert in how to get rid of telepathy, but...
I don't think you can. I think if you have the gift and you're tuned in, you've got it. It is what it is. Allison, you're stuck with it.
Learn to control it better so that it doesn't impinge on your everyday life. That's one of the things that I found with mediums, actually, in my field work, is that the seances at the lodge provided kind of like a safe place for these kinds of activities to take place. So they could, you know, they could remove it from their everyday life, like intrusions from spirits communicating with them and things like that, and say to them, you know, actually, we're going to do this at a specific time in a specific location. And I think in that way, you know, perhaps by giving some kind of a structure to your experiences, by saying, you know, like encouraging them only for like an hour a day or something, then, you know, you can rein it in a little bit.
How long did it take you, Jack, to write Spirits, Gods, and Magic? How long did you work on it?
That book was actually written 8 years ago, in 2011, 2012 it was. And I was kind of at a relatively early stage in my, you know, academic career. It took me, I think it took me about 6 months to a year to write.
That's not bad. Not bad. What are you working on now?
At the moment, I've just finished the final edits on the book that's coming out from my thesis, which is called Manifesting Spirits.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Kind of goes into all the details about the different kinds of processes underlying mediumship. And that should be out in November. And I'm working on another edited book with an anthropologist called Diana Espirito Santo, called Mattering the Invisible, which is all, it's a collection of essays about different ways that matter, physical things are used in the kind of expression of invisible forces, spirits, and things like that.
Good for you. Well, I'm glad there's a scientist out there who's investigating the unusual and the paranormal. Up next, we continue with this theme on spirits and ghosts with Joshua P. Warren, live from Las Vegas. And we'll check in with him. Those of you on hold that didn't get a chance to talk with Jack Hunter, if you want to just stay on the line, we'll give you the first opportunity to talk with Joshua P. Warren when we take calls.